Tango Audio.
A quick thanks before we start the show. Filmmaking Confidential, the book, is getting rave reviews from readers, filmmakers, film professors, and even people in creative fields other than filmmaking. I just want to say thank you to all of you who ordered it and for your support. If you haven't yet picked it up and you want to learn more filmmaking secrets, Filmmaking Confidential is for you. It's available wherever books are sold in most countries around the world. Order it by visiting Audible or Amazon. To find out more, check out filmmakingconfidential.com and stevebalderson.com, and thank you. I'm Steve Balderson, and you're listening to the Filmmaking Confidential podcast. Each week, we meet with filmmakers, writers, actors, artists, and other notables. Many episodes include questions or commentary from other filmmakers listening to the conversation. Today's guest is writer, director, and actress Starina Johnson. Starina can be seen in award-winning films such as West Hollywood Motel, Round Ball, and my film Culture Shock, in which she plays a character who speaks entirely in acronym.
G-G-G-G! D-T-F-4-B-T-T-K-W-B! W-I-G-B-H-I-G-2-P-T-B-U-2-T-N-N-T-G-A-L-T-D-W-T-W-H-P!
Wow.
She's a genius somehow.
On stage, Starina's theater projects include Hollywood fringe darlings Pinata, directed by Stan Zimmerman, Complexion Woman, directed by Ebony Gilbert, as well as numerous Town Street Theater and NEO Ensemble Theater productions. She also co-produced the revival of Justin Tanner's Heartbreak Help. Starina's play Border Towns won Slam, Boston's Diverse Voices in Theater competition, and her short plays have been produced in theaters across the country.
The first real directing experience I vividly remember is actually because it was super challenging, in that I had a very, very young guy who would not take direction. He questioned every single, because you know how usually, like, if you give an actor direction, they do the thing. And he wanted basically a dissertation for me being like, I would like you to sit here. And I'd be like, okay. And the first few rehearsals, it was like, okay, that's fine. He wants a motivation. Okay. But it got to the point where I realized he just was a really terrible actor. That's horrible to say. But he, but yeah, it got to the point where I actually, I said this, and I've never said it since, and I hope to God I never do, but I finally just said, I want you to move there because I'm telling you to move there.
Right.
Because even once I would give him the direction and then explain it to him, half the time he still wouldn't do it. And I'd be like, but you have to get to where, like, you have to be there because you need to get that picture of water. And if you're not there, how the fuck are you going to get the pitcher of water? Like, you're a mile away from the pitcher of water. That's why I want you to move over there, because you need to drink out of the glass, you know? Like, yeah, so that was actually the first, like, real memorable of, okay, how do you actually communicate with actors in a way that they can understand? Because, you know, 9 times out of 10, however you communicate, an actor's going to get it. You know what I mean? Like, especially if they're a seasoned actor. But then there's always that 1% that you're like, what planet did you just come off of?
Have you had other problematic actor, director sort of experiences like that?
No, really. That was the only, I mean, there's been times where you know, give a direction and then it wasn't quite clear, and just like, you know, but that's how communication is anyway. Like, sometimes you say something and somebody's like, wait, I'm not quite getting you. And then you just change your tactic a bit or change your phrasing and they're like, oh no, light bulb, got it. You know what I mean? So I've never had a not light bulb, got it moment with an actor until this one guy. So I really do think it was just this guy. And considering I've actually heard from other directors who've since worked with him, it wasn't just me. Like, it is just this guy. So.
You and I have, I have directed and you have worked with Karen Black, who's one of the greatest of all time, and lots of other actors as well. And my question is about the different styles So actors have many different methods or means by which they learn it and learn to do what they do. How, as a director or an actor, working with other actors who have totally different styles of acting changed your experience as an actor or a director?
You know, very rarely does somebody's process really inhibit me. You know, I remember one of the first experiences I had with somebody with a whole other directing style. It was this man, Blair Beasley, who I adored. I loved him so much. But he was an instructor, and it was the first time I ever worked with a director who would actually give you all of the, like, you would basically sit down first day of rehearsal, and he would basically just go line, word, move here. Like, you know, like cross stage left, da 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 da. And he actually went through the entire script for every character and gave you all of your blocking that way. And I remember at the time, like the first, I was like, what is happening here? That's crazy. You know, because most directors you work with, they're very like free form kind of, you know, like organic blocking. But this was the first time I ever worked with somebody who was like rigid, like, no, this is where I want. He had his vision and this is exactly what you did. And, you know, and granted, if you got it up on its feet and something wasn't working, he'd fix it. But, like, you went in actually knowing your blocking. And I loved it. It was, oddly enough, I really loved it. I loved the structure of it. And actually, as a director, I still utilize it a little bit today. And it's funny because you can tell the actors who've never had that experience before because it really confuses them. They're just like, what do you mean? We're just not going to get it up on its feet. And it's like, no. I want to give you the blocking first so you have a basic of where I need you to be for whatever. And granted, there are some scenes, it's mainly for the really technical scenes, like especially scenes where you have a lot of, you know, a lot of people on deck, you know what I mean? Where you've got to, you know, really chess piece them out. But that was the first time I really experienced a very kind of completely different way of directing. And I'll never forget, we were in rehearsal for something once and this very young kid got up and like just didn't do the blocking, like just completely, like I don't even know what he was doing. And I remember Blair like was like, stop, and he's like, you are ruining my vision. And it was like he was so upset. But the kid, what he was doing was terrible. So it was like, yeah, no, he really is. And he's screwing all of our blocking up on top of it, you know? So, but yeah, it was very interesting, that one. So
I love how terrible it is, but it's hysterical. Like just like the sort of the whole scene that you just painted for us. Now, okay. As a director, give the actor a lot of freedom with dialogue.
Oh yeah.
Have you, or has it been frequently or not so frequently, that you've worked on a project where the word of the script, you know, the actual spoken words are so important that not only do you have to say them exactly right, but like maybe there's a sentence you can't wrap your head around. Like, I don't know how to say this.
See, I'm actually, it's funny you mentioned this because I was thinking about this the other day. Because when I write, I am very much so say the words like they're written, because a lot of times the stuff I write has a rhythm to it. And so if you don't say it how it's written, the rhythm gets thrown off and then it actually throws the pacing off. And you know, for a while the real fun thing to do was I use the term improv loosely, because a lot of times people weren't basing the improv on their character. They were just like, oh, it'd be funny if I said this, but it's like, would your character actually say that? No, it wouldn't. No, they wouldn't, you know? And so I actually have a kind of a hatred of that style of improv, but it does have its moments as long as it's character-based. Like if you can improv within the confines of what your character would do, that's a totally different thing. To me, part of my job as an actor is to figure out why a sentence is written the way it is. And don't get me wrong, because sometimes it's just a matter of, yeah, that's a typo. You know what I mean? Or yeah, that was supposed to be a colon and not a, you know, period or whatever it is, you know, that happens too. But for the most part, I really do try to say, why would my character say this line like this? Like what's going on? Because I do think that writers, a good writer thinks about that shit, you know, they really do. I take that very seriously. And if it's a line that I'm really like, I have no idea what's going on with this line, I'll ask, you know, that's the whole job of the director is to answer the questions, you know? But yeah, but for the most part, I try to say the line like it's written. And I was actually thinking about the story, like apparently with one of the Coen brothers, I remember hearing a story about how one of their first scripts, an actor kept fixing a line because of the way it was written. And they had to pull him aside. They're like, no, we want you to say it like that. It's written like that for a reason. Like, say the line like it's written. And the actor was like, oh. And then once he did that, he was like, oh, that's my character. Like, it was like, that was a light bulb moment for him to realize who his character was because of just the way this one line was said.
That's a really interesting thing, because on one hand, it's maybe you're thinking, oh, my brain makes sense of it better this way, like my human brain.
Yeah.
But as soon as I switch it over there, then suddenly it's like, oh my God, right. That's who this guy is, which
yeah,
is
exactly.
not me. It's
exactly.
somebody else.
Yeah. And that's, you know, for me, that's part of, you know, part of the beauty of acting is that I get to not be myself. You know what I mean?
If you put it in the sense of, you know, on the projects where I've been sort of loose with the delivery of the line, I hadn't written them.
Well, yeah.
And on a project that I have written, mm-hmm. there is a reason why I have written it that way, which yep. makes it make sense. And then I wonder now if I go back, I mean, some of the projects, you know, with screenwriters that wrote a script that I didn't write, didn't complain, you know, after yeah. the fact. But I wonder if, had they been on set, there would have been, you know, something sort of like, could you come over here for a second?
You know? Yeah, like, hey. And you know, and being is that I've been on set with you before, I don't recall anything ever being like so far removed. You know what I mean? It's, you know, like, and I feel like for the most part, most writers like, yeah, that's fine, you know, but it's when you start like really changing stuff. Cause like I said, like the improv, that's not even character based like that. Like to me that there's nothing that will take me out of a movie faster. If I can just tell that actors are just trying to one up each other as actors, as opposed to being in the character in the moment. Cause those are two very different things, you know? So.
Have you ever had conflict with other actors imposing their style on you while you're working?
Yes. I have a very strong hatred for method actors. And when I put that in quotes, it means that they're not actually method actors. They just heard the word and think it's cool. I remember once I was on set, I was in the Carolinas, and this guy like basically beat the shit out of me. And it was one where he needed to pick me up and like shove me against the wall, which there's a safe way to do that. And by the time that scene was done, I had bruises all over me because he was just really, I mean, really kind of beating the crap out of me. And, the next day, a lot of my costumes were sleeveless. And so it ended up being a huge problem because it's like, okay, do we have to make up your arms every day or do we actually change wardrobe? Or because, I mean, it looked like I had gone like freaking rounds with a boxer, you know? And I remember being on set with him and he was like, well, you can really hit me. And I was like, yeah, we don't do that. I was just like, No, like that's not something we do.
Was this situation one of the only times, or have there been other times that you felt unsafe?
There's been a couple times where I've been like, yeah, this actor's not. It's almost like, okay, your stage isn't your therapy. Like it's not your place to work on your stuff. Like, you know, don't take it out on the other actors on stage. Don't take it out on, you know. But yeah, it seems like sometimes certain personalities kind of gravitate to certain roles because they're trying to work through their own shit. And it's like, that's not the place to do that. So yeah, that's definitely not the first time. Probably won't be the last time, sadly.
Well, in that situation, did the director help, or was it just sort of?
You know, it was kind of one of those, there's only so many times you can tell somebody, please stop actually beating her up. You know what I mean? Where you finally just go, he's going to keep doing it. Just let's get this in as few takes as possible. And because at the end of the day, if somebody, when you call action, you know, there's nothing a director can really do, you know, like, I mean, I guess they could have stopped production and rehired another actor, but when you're on, you know, a limited budget, limited time, locations, you kind of just go, and that's not, you know, that's not the healthiest thing to do. And I'm sure if this was like a higher union production or something probably would have gotten done. But then again, you hear stories about, you know, what's his name, slapping the crap out of Meryl Streep. You know what I mean? So you hear about this stuff happening. So it's not like it doesn't happen. And I'm not condoning it. But at the same time, I think because I'm a very practical person, I'm always just like, you know what, just get through it. And then just hopefully you never hire this person again.
Writer, director, and actress, Starina Johnson. Another great guest familiar with working under pressure is Amanda Dibert.
The ISIS attacks that happened in Paris, and President Hollande was supposed to be coming from the soccer match that he was at when they struck to our set. We're also at the base of the Eiffel Tower. We have people from the Obama administration with us. We have the mayors of Paris, and we have, you know, former Vice President Gore. We have dignitaries, we have celebrities, and we're like concerned that we might be a target.
You can get a link to my full interview with Amanda Dibert at filmmakingconfidential.com or by subscribing for free to this podcast. When we come back, Starina shares some tips and insight into auditions and answers some questions from our audience. Stay with us. Now, back to our conversation with writer, director, and actress Starina Johnson.
You get more persnickety, you know? Like, I used to say yes to everything, and now I'm just like, do I really want to do this? Maybe, well, and you know?
Yeah, and you know, sometimes...
And sometimes it's a matter of, it's not even that you don't want to do it. It's that, like, my schedule, like, I could feasibly do this, but I will lose my mind and get no sleep for, like, 2 weeks, and do I want to do that to myself, you know? And you have to factor all that in. And the older you get, the better you are at realizing what do I get out of this as an artist, but also this is a business, you know? And I think that's something that a lot of artists struggle with, is understanding they are a business in every sense of that word. And if you're a business, you have to go, okay, is this the best for my business? Only on top of it being a business, you're also a human being. You know, like, you can't forget that you're a human being on top of all of that, you know? So, yeah.
When you're deciding to take a part or to do a project, what are some of the other criteria that you sort of think about as you're going through, like, the, should I do the project or not?
Script is always first and foremost. If it's an interesting script, even if it's a bit character, if it's a script that I'm like, no, I really like this script, I don't even care if I'm just janitor number 4 with no lines, you know, I just like the script and want to be a part of it. The people you're working with, honestly, even if it's an okay script, if it's a group of people you enjoy working with, that heightens the experience so much, you know what I mean? And honestly, I've seen mediocre scripts get turned kind of into gold again, because just you had a good group of people working on it and everybody gave their 110% and it turned out to be a good project. And then, money, obviously. Somebody's going to throw a wad of cash at you to do something. It's like, eh, okay.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, like, I mean,
again, you're a business. So.
Exactly. So, you know, if you're going to, a lot of people used to say, oh, they're selling out or whatever. And I said, no, they're not.
No,
they're
it's
being
a
smart.
Business. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a business. Why would you not?
John Cassavetes was a true artist, but he would go be in a stupid Hollywood blockbuster and get paid tons of money that then he could go and make his movies with his wife, Jenna Rollins, you know?
Exactly.
And it's like, he was stinking, but it's like, that's the secret, you know, to sustainability is to just, you know, make money and so that you can live and create the work that you want. Mm-hmm. Now, I have a chapter about this in my new book. I write in here about, like, sometimes an actor could be, we're going to talk about casting this section, okay, which is what I was going to visit about, which is in the book. Sometimes the person could be in early years, I would pick the person based on the ability. Mm-hmm. Without considering the interacting and the chemistry between the other people in the show.
Yeah,
and
which makes a difference.
It does, because it's, and I compare it to cooking. So it's like these ingredients together make, you know, every movie is an ensemble, even if it's not an ensemble piece.
Yeah.
You know, all the people that are picked, it's like this person could be the best performer in the world, but be terrible in this environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and And let's talk about that in your experience, like sometimes working with people who either are the perfect person for the wrong project or a so-so person who is excellent in this particular project.
It's weird because I feel like, you know, you have, again, you have the character, but then you also have the actor and then the actor's capabilities. Because some people, like, you can, honest to God, you can hate being on set with them, but the minute action is called, they are so good at being that character that you forget that they're an asshole when action is like, when they call cut. Like, you completely forget that. And you don't know till you get to set unless you've worked with them before, you know?
Yeah, I've experienced like prima donnas in sort of that way. It's like, oh God, they're just a handful. But what you're getting is phenomenal.
And I think that that's also something too, is you have to go, you have to, it's like a scale, you know? It's like, okay, is there prima donna-ness, does it outweigh their talent? And if it does, then yeah, don't, it's, no, nobody needs that headache. Because there's always another actor out there who's just as good. You just don't know it yet. That's another thing people forget is they think, I feel like people a lot of times get fixated on certain actors and the performances they give, and they forget there's a whole world of actors out there. You might just not have found another one that can bring just what you want that actually isn't going to be a dick about it.
What's your statement on gender and race as it relates to roles? I mean, let's say if the roles are written certain, are you free about rearranging those things or do you keep them?
I feel like if it's very specific, like for example, if you've got a neo-Nazi in Germany and whatever, it's probably going to be a white person. You know what I mean? Like there's not a lot of, you know, wiggle room with that. But like for the most part, I find that unless there is a legitimate reason in the script for a character to be a certain race, sex, whatever, then I don't understand why you would limit it. You know, like to me, that doesn't make any sense. Like if I read something and I think of an actor, when I get a script, I don't look at the character breakdowns. I just read the script. And then as I'm reading, I start hearing actors I know in my head reading certain lines. Somebody I've worked with a ton is Heather Horton. And I love her to death. And there are certain scripts that I hear her voice in my head. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is Heather. You know, I actually used to work at a casting agency years ago. And she was, whenever we would get scripts in, I can't tell you how many times I would send her on stuff and she would always get cast. And it was because I knew her so well, that not just as a person, but as an actor. And I would always just be like, this is a Heather role. Like this is her role. This is her role. This is her baby, you know?
Any tips for if I'm a new filmmaker and I'm getting ready, here's my script and I'm getting ready to cast a movie or a project. What are some things that I should know?
At the audition, if you have time, ask them to do something that seems completely out of normal for what the character would do. And the reason is see if they can follow direction. Because if you ask them to do something and like it makes no sense for the character, but they do it, they can follow direction. It can be something super simple and stupid. Like I'm trying to think of an example right now. But if you give them a direction that doesn't make sense for the character, but they follow your direction and it can even make it work sometimes, which is even weirder. you're like, I don't know why that worked. That wasn't, you know. But it's an easy, quick way to see if they follow direction.
Oh, that's a good tip. That's totally great.
Like for example, like I was in a casting once, and I had made a noise like hitting a ball like with a, you know, just like that. And the director's like, take that out, but add in like some other weird fucking noise. I don't remember what the noise was. He's like, do this noise instead. And it was like, I don't know, a bird call. It was something really ridiculous. And it was just like, made no sense for the scene, but I could tell. I was like, he's just trying to see if I can follow direction. Like, it's all he's doing, you know? So. Yeah.
Well, and then because you're a genius, you probably made the comic timing perfect.
Why did that bird call work? That makes no sense. Yeah, again.
Totally.
But I think that's a very, and that's something where you find that a lot with experienced casting directors and directors is you'll get them doing that just to see if you can follow direction.
I just wanted to say thank you because I've actually been writing down these and the tips, particularly about this last one about getting an actor to do something outside of the norm. I found this to be very helpful.
Oh, good.
Hey, okay. Well, hey, Lars, let me tell you another one, which I meant to say earlier, but I forgot about. occasionally, depending upon the movie and the amount of people in it, sometimes if it's a person who's sort of not known, or I don't know who they are and I haven't worked with them before, I sometimes would give them the character and or two characters. And I would say, can you do a video audition for me as if you were this person, just introducing yourself? So they would put the hat on of this character and they'd, you know, just say, hey, my name is da-da-da, this is what I do for a living. And then they would have a second tape of the second character and they would introduce themselves to me. And I found that if they were totally different, then it showed me a broader range for this person. That would tell me, well, they might be better in this part or this part, but at least they have some freedom. Now, mm-hmm. in the process of doing that, one thing that I found really helpful was I auditioned a person who played both types exactly the same, which told me that that person's scope of, you know, possibility was very, very narrow. Now, typically a person might say, oh, they're not a good actor because they don't have a big range. But in this case, that person played that thing, that color, that note, mm-hmm. so perfectly that they shined in this particular project when I put them in the right part. So sometimes, you know, somebody might be perceived as not such a great actor, but it's a note that is valuable somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But those are two different things. I wanted to just make sure I shared that. Thanks sort of went much. Back to
I
the
think
casting.
That's a great tip as well.
Yeah. Yeah, because there is difference between somebody who has range and somebody who is just, they are that character and they're brilliant at that character and you should hire them always for that character, you know?
Totally.
Hi. As you know, I'm an actor, but I'm also being a director, the sound engineers, second team. But one thing I find is if I'm going to a casting, first thing I do is I ask the director how he thinks the part should be played, because I could play it 1,000 different ways, but it's not going to fit into his head. So I ask them the direct question, you tell me, and then I play it. And then if he doesn't like it, then we move on and we do it his way, a different way again. And going back to where you were talking about the scripts before, I'll always go by the script. But if I feel that that script doesn't fit my normal character or the character I'm trying to produce, then I'll say, well, can we do it your way first? And then just for a bit of fun, try it my way. And then it gives them the opportunity.
That's really cool. How do you feel about improv, Paul?
I'm great. I love it.
Cool. Serena, we mentioned briefly improv versus what was written on the page, but have you ever done something that was just like full on, like here's just a structure outline.
Yeah.
There are no there's nothing really written. It's just sort of, you're going to go in here and move from A to C. We don't know what B is. Yeah. As long as you get to C, it'll work.
I've had, you know, it's funny. I do an improv. It's actually a dramatic improv based, one of my jobs, is dramatic improv based. And it's basically like you have a bare bones structure, but you kind of have to, wherever the other person takes you is where you kind of go with it, you know? In terms of that, there's two memories I have very vividly. There was a scene we were working on. And I remember because we all knew those characters so well, like it was really intense. It was a really, really intense scene. And then a few years ago, I had an audition that was, it was improv-based audition, and it was, honest to God, the most, I still think about this audition in terms of how awful it was, because they'd given us sides, and I do this thing where when I go in to audition, if they have other sides there, I read all the sides, because then you can get even more clues as to what's going on with your character a lot of times. Yeah. So it's like, I look and see, okay, does this side have my character in it? Yeah, I'm going to read this side. Because a lot of times they don't give you all of the sides for a project. They just give you your sides.
Yeah.
And basically they gave us, you know, like, we want you to get from point A to point B. We don't care how you get there. And there were very specific things that were set up. And I remember, you know, one of the big things in improv is, there's no you don't negate things. You know, it's yes and. You yes and everything. And this person, like the character, the way it was written, was kind of a shitty character, honestly. Like she, you know, wasn't a good character. And the improv person was like, the person we were supposed to act with, like kept negating everything. And it was just, it was so bizarre. And so, cause I've never had that experience with an improv actor. I was just like, and then at one point the person was like, I felt like you were a very abusive person. And I was just like, that's the character. What do you want me to, like, I didn't write the fucking character. Like, I'm sorry that you felt scared of me, but that's like, that's the character that was written, you know? Like, it was just, it was super weird. It was just a weird, weird experience. And it made me like really not like that structure for an audition. Because unless you're doing an improv-based film, why the fuck are you having an actor? Are you going to pay the actor for writing for you? Because that's what you're asking the writer. That's what you're asking the actor to do. You're asking the actor to be a writer. And I don't think that's appropriate. And if you're going to do that, you need to pay them for their time.
Totally. Yeah.
You know, and so.
I'll just come in on that, Steve. Quite a number of years ago, a director phoned me up and said, will you do this improv movie? I said, well, okay. And I didn't know the actor at the time, but the actor that he brought in was for his first job. And every time he tried to do a line, he couldn't follow on.
Yeah.
He couldn't do the improv. And it's
I'm sure
there.
It just felt like nails on a chalkboard. It was, I can just think of it right now. Like,
But it's out there on YouTube somewhere. Don't look at it.
I love how you tell us where it is, too. I have directed Doug in a made-for-TV movie where he played Elvis's father.
That's fun.
Which was totally fun to work with him. Doug, what is your take on, and let's all visit about this, because I feel that if an actor is walking in out of the room, to go back to what Paul said, and doesn't tell the actor anything, then really, I don't think that that director should have any judgment about the performance, because the actor is only going with either what they know or what they've gathered out of the sides. But I have had friends who are filmmakers who berate and judge actors who were terrible in an audition, but it's like they had no time spent with the director.
Yeah.
I mean, from the...
Well, also,
from
some people just are bad auditioners, honestly. Well, I know some brilliant actors who are just shitty auditioners, which sucks for them, because that's... But honestly, auditioning is kind of a completely different skill set than acting. Because
yeah,
because
I've
so
known
many
people
different...
that are brilliant auditioners and are shitty actors.
Oh, yeah, and I've had that experience as a director before, too. Because actually, the kid I was talking about, the director, he had a brilliant audition. And then when he came in, I was like, oh my God, you are a nightmare, you know? And it was just like, people could have moments of brilliance, but it doesn't mean it's sustainable, you know?
Well, so. Something Paul said, which I wanted to piggyback on, is that's one of the problems with these self-tapes now, as I find from an actor standpoint, is I don't have the benefit of asking the director, how do you see this character? What are your thoughts on this? You don't have that interaction. So you're sending something in cold with your perception, and someone's watching it and going, well, that's totally wrong. Well, how do they know that? I don't know it's totally wrong. It's totally right the way I see it. So it's a real disservice.
And then you also have the thing of, you know, you run the risk of like, well, I could do this, like, let's say three different ways, three very distinct different ways. But are they going to actually watch it?
No, they don't want it.
No, they aren't.
They firmly say.
No, I know. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Like, if they give you that freedom, then who's to say they're even going to watch those other two takes? You know, even though, like, one of those might actually be the take that they would be like, that's the person. But they don't know that because they just watched the first one. They're like, nah. Yeah, I'm right there with you.
10 seconds.
Yeah, and it does tie into what Steve was saying about if a director doesn't give you some... Mm-hmm. formula or some parameters to work off of, you're going in with, okay, this is how I see it, I interpret it, I see the line, the relationship, and so you're kind of on your own. So to berate an actor for that is really a disservice to the whole process, as far as I'm concerned, because
you really
need to be on the same page.
I don't understand why, because, you know, as much as I love the idea behind self-tapes, I'm like, we have Zoom. We're having a conversation right now. set up an audition like you would normally, do it by Zoom. Like, there's no reason you can't. You know, and if an actor can't make that, then they can send in their self-tape audition. But otherwise, like, I do not understand why people can't just set up Zoom auditions and have your little waiting room and have people come in as they need to. I mean, they could literally do it the exact same way as before, only instead of people driving to an audition, they could be doing it over Zoom or whatever platform they choose.
I had never had the experience with the director. And see, this, he reached out to me after or considering casting me to talk about the character. So we actually spent time talking about it and how he envisioned. So it was really nice to have that before I even went on set. I was away, and we hadn't met face to face, but it was a phone call. And I really enjoyed that. It gave me some idea. And he also knew where I was coming from as an actor. Mm-hmm. So that was very helpful. For me, it was because I felt like, okay, I already have a relationship with the director and we can talk.
Yeah.
Which isn't that the whole point?
Yeah.
Supposedly.
No. Yeah. Relationships are gross, Steve. What? No.
Especially on sets.
Yes.
Serena's got a good point about the auditions over Zoom. I've never known any other job where you have to pay to work. In other words, you're paying to go to an audition, and you might go backwards and forwards a couple of times and then knock at the job. Mm-hmm. And it might have cost you a couple of $100, whatever.
Yeah, we've been talking about that a lot in terms of like voiceover stuff, because now basically they're even to audition for voiceover. Before it was like, oh yeah, just put it on whatever and send it over, like if you can't come in. But now they basically are asking you what your in-home setup is. And if you don't have whatever they want, they won't even audition you. And it's
I have had that.
That's crazy.
I've had that experience. They wanted to have a picture of my booth.
Yeah.
And I went, you're not auditioning my booth, you're auditioning my voice.
Yeah, except for that I have some voiceover friends who are like, no, they've been dropping off the equipment, like, you know, once they want to hire me.
Yeah.
But now they're not even doing that. Now they're like, if you don't have basically a professional at-home studio, you're not even getting considered. And that's just asinine. Like, I'm not an engineer. I'm not an audio engineer. That's not my job, you know? So, again, much like editing, I am not an editor. Exactly. I am not an audio engineer. I know my limitations.
Well, and you know, so I narrated my audiobook for Audible myself, right? Mm-hmm. And if you saw how I did it, I mean, I had a really good microphone because it was just left over from filming and it was the boom that I used. So it was a good quality microphone, but it looked terrible. But it sounds just like, I mean, you know, the setup, you know, whatever.
It ain't pretty, but it works.
Exactly. And I had a friend who, I think she spent like $20,000 getting all this stuff set up so that it looked right. You know, like it looked like this.
And then
fancy
she like
place.
Returned it the next day.
Well, yeah, I don't know. She Amazon Primed it. She did the job for a month and returned it. Which I have done a couple of times with expensive sort of set pieces like fog machines or, you know, anything that's like $500 that you will never use again.
Yeah.
I've been known to do that.
I'm just a fan. I'm not an actor or a director. And I just want to give a little background. So Starina and I met, it was about 13 years ago now, on this 48-hour film festival shoot that was a mess from beginning to end. What really stuck out to me is how professional she was through the whole entire time. There were two scripts written, and I'm not even sure we used either one of them. But I just remember her being so professional. And so I've been a fan ever since. And actually, that's how I found out about you, Steve. And she started doing your movies. I'm like, oh, and I looked into your catalog. So kind of my question is, you know, as actors, you know, or directors or both, kind of how do you deal with that frustration, whether it's a film shoot that's, you know, not going well in whatever sense, like it's taking a long time, your other actor across from you is, you know, just not doing well, or how do you deal with the frustration?
I think you know, like everything, some days it's better than others. Some days, you know, people are on your last nerve and you just have to kind of keep breathing. And you know, all you can do is your best. You can't, if the lights are failing, if another actor's being a dick, if like, you cannot account for all of the variables. All you can do is account for yourself. And if other people are making life on set miserable, your job isn't to up that. You know, I try to on set be the person people can come to for reassurance and a calming, not even calming, but just the person who isn't going to like yell at you and like berate you or what, you know, I'm human. I'm sure there have been sets where I've been the asshole, you know. It doesn't help anybody to add to the chaos. And then on top of it, you know, at the end of the day, we're all trying for the same goal, hopefully. You know, like sometimes you wonder about people, but you know, we're all trying to make the best product possible that people will enjoy. And so if you kind of keep that in the back of your head of, you know what, this is going to take 30 minutes to reset up because something went wrong. At the end of 30 minutes, we'll try again. And hopefully it doesn't screw up this time. But if it does, we'll wait another 30 minutes, you know? And so I think it's just a matter of, I don't know. You have to kind of be zen in your own head for things like that.
Writer, director, and actress, Starina Johnson. Find out more by visiting starinajohnson.com. You can see Culture Shock at vimeo.com/ondemand/culture shock. Tune in next time for more Filmmaking Confidential. It is totally free to subscribe, and when you subscribe, you'll get upcoming new episodes automatically, and you'll have free access to all our past shows. The Filmmaking Confidential podcast is a production of Dakanga Audio and produced by myself and Ella Spencer. Our theme music is composed by Kevin Robles. For more of the Filmmaking Confidential podcast, head over to filmmakingconfidential.com. If you have a question about filmmaking you'd like answered on the podcast, send me an email using the contact form on the website. To learn more of my filmmaking secrets, be sure to pick up a copy of the book, Filmmaking Confidential, available on Audible, paperback, and ebook, wherever books are sold. I'm Steve Balderson. Thanks for listening and spreading the word. Until next time, keep making, keep doing, keep going.